This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. We haven't seen each other in a while.
Yeah, for a while, a month or
since,
so.
Since our last show of the last season, we're on the go in our 10th season. Unbelievable.
Number 10.
Number 10.
George Ferguson. Remember him?
Son George. We always said we'd stay on the air. We can't leave the air until the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup.
This is the year, Wally. This is the year.
Well, they're on the go in the preseason. A couple of nice victories against the hated Habs over the weekend, but it's preseason.
They look like they have some young talent
there. Well, but this Knees kid, Nye's Knees, I got to figure out how do you actually pronounce his name. It's Matthew. He's looked really good, so he's got a place on the team. Interesting to see which line he's going to be on. I think they've got him projected to be on the number two line. He certainly looked good. And you know what? That draft choice that they picked up, I think his name's Easton Cowan, isn't
Easton
it?
Easton Cowan,
from the
yep.
London Knights?
London Knights.
Yeah, I mean, he's looked really, really good in the preseason. But preseason's preseason, so...
He reminds me of Jake DeBrusque.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting comparison, Naz. If he can turn out into that type of player, I got to think they're going to send. I got to think they're going to send him back.
They're not going to send him down for sure.
They're not going to burn up a year. Preseasons. You're not playing the top dogs on the other team. So a lot of times you're playing AHL lineups on the other team. But you know what? From what we've seen so far, looks like a pretty good. Pretty good draft choice there where they picked him up. I think he was in the 20s there. 28th, yeah. So, we wish him the best of luck. But I got to think he's going back to the London Knights.
Yeah, he's going back for sure. But the Leafs seem to have some good young players still, and they developed them. So we should...
So, hope springs eternal. We won't get into it too much today. The season's going to be starting in a couple of weeks. We'll get into it in due course. But other team close to home, the Toronto Blue Jays. They lost.
Made it.
They made it. They didn't make it through the front door, I guess, the proverbial back door. When they finished the game yesterday, they needed a Seattle Mariner loss, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Seattle Mariner loss.
So they had all the champagne ready to go yesterday afternoon on ice, from what I understand. I mean, that's the way baseball is. You win, you get into the playoffs.
You
have some magic celebration. We've had that discussion on this show almost every year. I quite don't get it, but I guess it's a long season and. I guess in today's world, if you could grab an occasion to celebrate.
As you get older, you put up with it, Wally.
Yeah, I guess if you grab an occasion to celebrate, you celebrate it. But, congrats to the Blue Jays. We're thrilled. Naz, I noticed you're wearing your Blue Jay top today and your Argo cap. So
Argos 12-2.
Argos are doing great, which segues me into our guest lineup for today. The Ryder Cup's going on. I'm watching it on my little iPhone here. The Euros had a remarkable couple of days. The Americans fought back a little yesterday afternoon. The Americans are, it's going to be tough for them to overcome this, but they're giving it a shot today. They've got a lot to overcome, and we're going to talk to John Steinbreder of Global Golf Post and Masters.com. John's been on the show. He always comes on a major championship Sunday, and we consider the Ryder Cup a major championship in its own right. So who better than talk to John Steinbreder? And later on in the hour, this week, October 4th to be exact, the 150th anniversary of the Toronto Argonauts, a remarkable oldest professional sports franchise in, I think, North America. I'm not sure it's the world, but we can get our guest Mike Hogan, Hoagie, to confirm that. It's going to be a special week. The Argonauts are having a fantastic season. Didn't get a great result on Friday night, but doesn't really matter. They've got first place locked up. They're arresting a lot of their starters, and Winnipeg Blue Bombers are, you know, they're that's a team we beat in the Grey Cup last year, and so the Argos look fantastic. There's going to be a really special game this Friday night down at BMO, the 150th anniversary game of the Toronto Argonauts. We got all the legends coming in, a whole bunch of guys. The great Argos of the past, and I still call him the voice of the Toronto Argonauts, Naz. Mike Hogan, Hoagie, his voice is unmistakable, and it's always a significant pleasure and privilege to have him on the show.
He's a big football guy. NFL, CFL, and college football.
It's always great to have Hoagie on the show. I'm really, really looking forward to that, and he's going to bring us up to speed on all the special celebrations and a fantastic Argo season so far. They've Chad Kelly, the quarterback's been fantastic. You know, they've got some talent. They've got number 34 there, Willette, who's a great running back. So, you know what? It's going to be a thrill to talk to Hoagie about the Argos. But going back to the Jays. Obviously, Naz, we're thrilled that the Jays have made the playoffs. It's been an up-and-down season, quite frankly. We've had some highs. We had some lows, probably, you know, that was that series. I don't know if you were here. I don't know if you're away. They had that big series against Texas where they came in, and we were fighting Texas for a playoff spot, and we got trounced in every game. But the Blue Jays have shown an ability to bounce back. Thankfully, they didn't have to fight. They didn't have to trot Gausman out to the mound today. We got the ability to save him for the first playoff game. Thankfully, the Mariners lost last night, and we didn't have to win today. So we've got our ace in reserve. Short series. Jays are, when they talk about the best rotations pitching-wise in baseball, you know, the Jays are in the conversation of the best four starters. Pretty good bullpen. Romano's considered one of the top closers in the game. If they can somehow catch lightning in a bottle, hitting-wise, Naz, they could cause some damage in the playoffs.
Yeah, their hitting is the weakest part of their lineup right now, and the pitching has been good. And who would have thought that Alec Manoah was not even in the starting rotation? And look at their performance so far this year. It's been great.
Yeah,
but they can't hit. That's the problem. They can't hit.
Well, it's... Hitting sometimes can be cyclical. It can be streaky. You know, Guerrero hasn't been hitting like the MVP guy from a couple of years back. But Bichette's, you got to say he's one of the top players in the game. Guerrero can be. Yeah. So certainly, you know, if we can unleash those bats somehow, you never know. You never know. Saw the point in the last couple of years. You know, the Philadelphia Phillies weren't necessarily one of the top teams in the NL last year, but they managed to work their way to the World Series last year, and I think the Braves did sort of less the same thing a few years back. So the Jays, you know, they always say pitching's the most important part of the game, so if they seem to have that part of it, I wouldn't say locked up might not be the best word, but... Certainly as a strength, and considered, they match up pitching-wise fairly well against whatever competition they're going to have. So, you know, you get some of those bats going, Naz, you never know what can happen.
Yeah, and they have Bassett who's been pitching very, very well. I think he's going to go game two, not Berrios. So I think it's Bassett.
You're seeing Bassett in game two?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. After the first game where he gave up 9 runs in his first game as a Blue Jay, his ERA is like 3-something, 3.1.
Yep.
And he's been a very good pitcher. And the guy throws a 72-mile-an-hour curveball. Can you believe it? He's got 9 pitches in his repertoire, and he's throwing 72-mile-an-hour curveballs. And the Batters can't even hit it. They can't hit it.
Unbelievable.
It's
anyways,
incredible.
So you're thinking Gausman, Bassett, and Berrios?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And from what I understand, Naz, you educated me before we went on the air. It's going to be best two out of three. I find it difficult to keep up with the permutations of what goes on these days, but it's going to be a best two out of three, either starting in Minnesota or starting in Tampa. We'll find out today, depending on what happens in some of the Houston, Texas games, and what the Jays do, and there's a whole algorithm of what might happen today, but the bottom line is we're starting in Minnesota. We're starting in Tampa, one of the two. There's going to be three games if necessary. First team to win two games. From what I understand, Naz, they're not coming home during the first three-game series.
Too, yeah.
Okay. So we wish the Jays the best of luck. And baseball, there's nothing better than fall baseball. It gets exciting and should be a thrilling. I've just got a sense the Jays are going to. They're going to do something special in these playoffs. I got my fingers crossed.
Watch for Varsho to have a big series.
We certainly will. We're going to take it to break. We've got the Ryder Cup going on over in the Marco Simone Golf Club over near Rome in Italy. The Euros have given the Americans a bit of a beatdown. The first couple of days, they're in the midst of the singles matches right now. I'll catch up during the break, see what's going on. And who better to talk about that than our friend and one of the great golf journalists in the world, John Steinbreder. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville held a quiz. A Panzerotti is A, an expensive Italian sports car, B, a famous Italian opera singer, or C, a mouth-watering pizza, fresh made with your choice of toppings, folded and deep-fried or baked to a golden crust. Hint, if you're hungry, choose C. Call Pizzaville from your cell at £3636.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. We also live audio and video stream on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour our good friend, one of the great golf journalists in the world with Global Golf Plus and also with Masters.com. Of course, I'm talking to John Steinbreder. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you today?
We're doing great. We're probably doing what you're doing. I'm sitting here trying to look at my microphone here with one eye in my screen, and I got the other eye on my iPhone. I think John Rahm's about to hit a shot. And from what I can tell, the Americans are putting up a little bit of a fight today, John. You know, they got it handed to them the first day Friday and yesterday morning, with the Americans a little bit of a pushback yesterday afternoon. And if they can swing a couple of matches here in the last nine holes, they might still make it interesting, John. What's your assessment?
Well, yeah, I think, as we know, anything can happen in match play. You know, Hovland just won. Rory just dropped a hole, so he's three up, but that still is pretty good. And McIntyre is two up, so, you know, the Europeans are still in the better position. But, they could make the Americans are making a match of it. It's a very, very tough burden to overcome, I think, with where they let themselves even after that good final session yesterday. But, you know, it's exciting. It's compelling. I mean, I think what happened at the end yesterday with Lakava and his behavior on the 18th green, which is, I thought, appalling for a guy who could know better. It's one thing for players' wives who don't know any better in Brookline to go running across the green, but for a veteran caddy like that to pull that stunt, I thought was pretty weak. And it's interesting to see what that brought to this already very competitive Ryder Cup here, because you know, there's an element to this that is much more powerful than you normally see. I mean, I came down this morning, the first thing I did is I'm trying to write. It's not easy to write when you've got this thing in the background, and I keep getting up to see shots, and you know, you turned it right on, and I think it's a lot of fun to watch. It's very compelling stuff. It's golf really at its very best. I mean, I just adore so much about the Ryder Cup, and none of the tension, none of the energy, none of this seems at the least bit contrived. I mean, these guys are really going at it and going at it hard. It's much watched TV.
John, a lot of storylines aside from the golf. Obviously, you referenced the Rory Lakava incident yesterday, where the caddy Lakava, the American caddy, found himself. I think this was after. Can't remember who the American was that sank that. Was it Cantley?
He birdied the last three holes yesterday, yeah. And it sunk like a 40-foot putt from birdie yesterday to win that match. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, so Lakava stuck himself in Rory's eyesight when Rory still had an opportunity to make a putt to have the hole. So that didn't go over too well. And with the beauty of social media nowadays is everybody's got a camera. The whole world's got a camera. And somebody managed to capture that that animated incident between Rory when he was going at this was after the match, when they were heading into the cars afterwards in the parking lot. And Rory was, I mean, couldn't hear the audio, but it looked like he was screaming at Lakava. And I think Bones McKay had to come in and interject, and Shane Lowry had to grab Rory and hustle him back into the car. Man, you know, you think golfers don't get emotional. Rory was, man, he was not happy, was he?
Well, there are more than a few F-bombs dropped there. To say the least, and I think that, you know, that Rory and Fitzpatrick both had a point, because neither one of them had putted yet.
Yeah,
and you know, Lakava is walking around right behind Rory. He's trying to line up his putt, and you know, and getting all, you know, into it. And it's just like, you know, the things are still going on. And so, listen, you still got to make the putt. Rory didn't. Fitzpatrick didn't. And so the Americans won, but it was just, for a veteran guy like that, it was really kind of uncalled for and unnecessarily. And I guess Shane Lowry was going out of his mind, and Lakava's getting chippy with him. And I think Lakava's a tough guy, but I think Lowry would take him in a second, so we don't want to, I think he wants to be careful there. And if anybody's been reading the books and reading between the lines of the whole Phil Mickelson saga, a few choice words to his former caddy would have been pretty funny there at the same time by Rory. It sort of lended a Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding element to the whole thing that I find quite enjoyable, because I love sports, and I just love to see that kind of burning competition. And these guys are so good to watch and so much fun to watch. And I love to see that passion. And, you know, right now, I mean, who knows what will happen by the time we get off this call. Rory may be tied with Sam Burns, but right now Rory has channeled his energy. And Lowry just made a putt a little while ago to go up one or two on his match. So Good on him, but man, I tell you, I couldn't wait to get down and turn on the TV this morning. Honest to God, I generally don't like watching golf on TV except for the Masters and the Open Championship, because it just, you know, it's even in the majors sometimes it's just not as exciting as you want. But this is riveting stuff, I think.
Should Dustin Johnson have made this team, John?
No, I don't think so. I think Zach Johnson answered that question really well when he said, listen, he hasn't done well in the majors, and I don't know that he'd even want a live event, and he's playing 54-hole, no-cut tournaments. And I think he had every reason to believe, even though DJ, I think, remains one of the best players in the game and went 5-0 at Whistling Straits 2 years ago, that he would have been as good as the team he assembled. So I don't think he should have, and I think there's a consequence to his actions, and that's too bad on DJ's part. And he made a choice knowing that this is probably going to impact his ability to make the Ryder Cup, in spite of Greg Norman led these guys down the primrose path by telling them this was going to affect these sorts of things. And it's too bad, because DJ is a great player, but I think Zach made the right choice not doing it.
John, the Americans obviously got off to a really, really horrid start on Friday and Saturday morning as well, and sort of turned it around yesterday. And, you know, obviously when you're winning, you can be more animated and express your emotions and your... But the criticism, I don't know if it's a criticism or maybe an observation, is some people report that this means more to the Europeans, and that's why they tend to be so successful at those things. Do you accept that?
I don't know. I think that I did for a long time. I mean, I really believe that fervently, and I think the Poulters, Bevies, the Westwoods, the Sergios, I just think they always carried this chip on their shoulder, I think, because, you know, big bad America, and, you know, they never got their due. And, I mean, Seve certainly was always feeling he never got his due. And I think Sergio, too, and Poulter and Westwood, you know, couldn't win a major. And yet they just, and Monty as well, just played lights out. So I think there was that. I just think I spent some time, you know, on the European tour, traveling with players and being with them. And, you know, the tournament would be over, the round would be over, we'd go out to dinner, and there'd be 25 of us sitting around a table, and it'd be all the guys eating together, whereas the Americans are much more, you know, in their own space and in their own hotel room or their own house. And there seemed to be a camaraderie in the European tour. And this is going back into the 90s and the 2000s, but I remember seeing that and feeling that and just understanding there was this huge difference, I think, in it's not just wanting it more. I just think there was a connection that made that team spirit greater. And then you throw it, and I think the greatest example of that is in the foursomes, in the alternate shot play, which the Americans still can't figure out how to. I mean, Luke Donald was brilliant. Let's start off both days with alternate shot. The Americans stink at it, and the Europeans are quite good at it. And I think that speaks a lot to their camaraderie and their ability to kind of play together, where the Americans are so many times coming in as, you know, several men on different islands as opposed to that huge team. I think it's a little less so, though. I mean, there seems to be a lot of camaraderie, on the American team now. I mean, Thomas and Spieth, and I think that's one reason why Zach picked Justin Thomas to play and all that. But so maybe it's not, the gap is not as great, but I still think it's a valid point that there's just something that the Europeans want a little bit more, and I think they're a little bit more closely connected.
Just watching my screen here, it looks like John Rahm was celebrating something on the 18th, but Scheffler looked like he was happy too. If I'm reading that correctly, I think they tied. They have the first match.
That was that one shot lead, and I thought, just as you guys called in, he had pushed his second shot out of the rough to the right. So, that's good. I mean, you know, what a hell of a match. You know, those two guys. And I tell you, the guy who impressed me is Victor Hovland. God, he's been great all year.
Unbelievable.
We've talked about him. We've talked about him, you know, several times as we've talked during majors this year on major Sundays. He's just been a delight to watch.
Well, right now it's the Euros 12 and the USA 6. The Euros need another 2.5 points to carry it. So the U.S. is not done yet. If they can pull a miracle in the on a lot of these matches on the back nine, you never know. John, the Zach Johnson has come under a lot of, the American captain has come under a lot of criticism. I don't know how much of it is justified, and perhaps we can have a discussion about that. The sense was that maybe some of his pairings weren't very good. The sense was some of his captain's picks, maybe, you know, Spieth and Thomas and some of these other guys weren't playing their A games coming into this thing. In fact, some of the Americans are being criticized because they haven't played a lot of golf in the last 5 weeks, and perhaps that's evidence. Maybe they're taking it casually. I don't believe that, but your assessment of Zach Johnson's some of his decision making throughout pre-tournament and also during the tournament.
I mean, I thought, for example, when he spoke about not picking DJ, I thought he was very rational and very thoughtful about that. I think he tried to get the team over there for a nice warm up. I mean, you know, six captains picks is a lot. That's a little bit, you know, makes a little bit of a dicier situation. I guess I get why he picked JT. He's trying to develop, as we were just talking about, that camaraderie, and he knows he and Spieth are generally very good at that. But there are some guys left off, like, you know, Keegan Bradley, for example, and Lucas Glover, that you would have thought, well, those guys were playing well, and maybe they deserve to be there. I think he's done fine. It's hard. It's, you know, people find a million ways to criticize it, and there's just so much he can do. You know, it's about the players playing well and getting the ball in the hole and beating their guys and being prepared. And I don't know. I can't really see criticizing him that much. He's a quiet guy. He's a thoughtful guy. He's a smart guy. And I think that he did as well as could be expected. I thought it was good that, you know, that Koepka was on the team. You know, obviously he was a automatic, I believe, with winning the winning the PGA. But I thought that was good to have him. I thought that was a really thoughtful, good pick. And you know, I can't criticize him too much. I just think the Americans have a hard time over in Europe, and you know, with Luke Donald being able to, you know, set up the foursomes both at the start of both days and kind of take things on there and get the course set up the way he wanted. I just think they're at a distinct advantage by doing that.
Other aspect of the European teams over the years, and I like your thoughts on this, certainly in this particular Ryder Cup, Euros leaders, you know, they have perceived leaders on the team. You look at John Rahm, you look at Rory McIlroy, you look Hovland, not so much leadership maybe from his experience, but certainly from his play. He's been the best golfer in the world last 3 months. He's lights out. Justin Rose, you see him stepping up. The European leaders, they seem to step up. I'm not so sure I can say the same thing for the Americans. I don't know where the leadership is on the American team. John?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right on that. It's so interesting. I mean, look at Justin Rose. I mean, he's had himself a hell of a Ryder Cup. I don't know how he's doing right now with this match with Cantley. I think he was two down when we got on this call together. But you know, he's played brilliantly, and I think you've seen this over the years where there's one or two guys that always kind of rise, like Monty used to always do so, or Poulter used to always do. And I think, you know, kind of takes part of the team, at least on their backs, and really energizes the whole thing. Graham McDowell back in Celtic Manor in 2010 was awesome, and others feed off of that. And again, we've watched so many times as Americans watch the Ryder Cup, and you know, disastrous, you know, Phil and Tiger pairings and different things. It's hard to say, but it seems the Europeans just have a way of doing that a little bit more often. And again, I just think they want this so much. This means so much. And it means so much because it meant so much to Seve and to Bernard Langer and Faldo and Monty and people that came well before them. And it's just in their DNA, it seems. And to look at McIntyre and to look at Hovland and to look at these young kids that, you know, are in there right now, it's like they haven't missed a beat. They just pick up that attitude and that energy that just makes this such a compelling event for them and helps them rise to the occasion.
One of the other stories this week was Cantley, and he's made his. I mean, some of the players have made it known that they don't like the fact they're not getting paid. So he hasn't been wearing a hat, and somehow the press ran with that for a couple of days, saying that was a statement. And all it really came down to was the fact that he couldn't find a hat that fit well. Could they not find a hat that fit this guy anywhere? I just find that just an amusing story, John.
Well, my mother had a great expression when somebody was full of it. She would say, they would say something, and she would say, "I find that very difficult to credit." And I've got a big head. I've got a 7 3/4 head, and I wear visors instead of hats because my head in one of those beanie caps with people that pass for hats these days looks ridiculous. And I can find plenty of visors, and headgear that fit my head. So I don't know what the hell Cantley is talking about. and so I'm not buying his rap at all. And I just really, and maybe he's ticked off that he didn't make the move to live. I mean, he could be one of these guys that's, wondering, well, what's in it for me? I stayed loyal to the PGA Tour and I should get some benefit of that. And so there may be lingering issues there. And of course, this is PGA of America, not PGA Tour. So it's a whole different entity, but they have the agreement. My father used to say this to me, bringing up my parents. Now, daddy, so was telling me, listen, the rules going in. If you don't like
don't go.
What the rules are, then don't go. And it's, it's just a little, if that's the case, I'm just not sure it was a hat fitting thing. I thought it was interesting today with Morikawa, I saw, wasn't wearing a hat, and Xander wasn't wearing a hat. So, they're trying to show some solidarity, but most of the Americans were wearing hats, including Koepka, who I guess would certainly be his own man in any sort of thing like this. I don't know what it is. Azinger goes nuts and says this is all clickbait and it's nonsense, but I don't know. I mean, he was not, I just don't buy the fitting thing at all.
I'm not buying that. Imagine.
They can't get a hat to fit for a guy. My goodness.
John, what do you think of the...
Let me ask you guys a quick question, because I'm curious, if you don't mind, where does Canada stand in these matches? And you guys primarily rooting for the Americans? Do you root for both? And
that's a great question, John.
I think it's pretty well split, John.
I think that's a really great question. I you know what, to be honest with you, I've never really rooted for either one. I can't say that I necessarily root for the Americans, never have. I don't necessarily root for the Euros. I love the theater of it. I love the competition, and I love great golf, and especially golf under these pressurized conditions where golfers actually show their emotions, which, you don't see that on the PGA. You may see it on a major championship Sunday, but, not that much on the PGA Tour. I would guess that we're probably in Canada, probably evenly split. Is that fair to say, Ness?
I agree with that. Yeah. U.S. is classified as the best, and you always go for the underdog, so that's why you have the fans of the European team. That's what I think, John.
Hey, I root a lot for the Europeans just because I love their camaraderie and their team spirit.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
But I'm just curious. That's interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was
It's a great question, John.
Where you guys stand on that.
Yeah. What do you think of the course they're playing on, John?
I've never played it. I've had friends of mine who've played it, and they weren't overly impressed. Very, very difficult, thick, rough, made for an event like this. I've wanted to write this column, and it's been written by others before. I think it's so sad in some ways. I mean, I love it, having lived in southern Switzerland, the Italian-speaking canton of Switzerland, and spent a lot of time in Italy. I love Italy. I love the fact that they've got a Ryder Cup there. I love the Molinari brothers. I think all of that is good, but it's sort of like the Le Golf National outside of Paris, the Belfry. I mean, these aren't great golf courses. They're really picked because of the money that the European PGA is able to get from these places. And it's not, you know, they're not classic courses like you have, of course, all through the British Isles and in Ireland and whatever. Which I just think the golf courses are that much better and that much more interesting. So I haven't heard great things about it. And like Le Golf National, I think it's a very, very tough test of golf. The three of us would enjoy playing a lot of other courses before that. But as a venue for the Ryder Cup, I think they take a lot of things into account, how it's going to play for guys this good in these sorts of matches. And I think it works out very well. It seems it's got short fours, it's got long fours, it's got reachable par fives, it's got, you know, tough par threes. And I was laughing at one of them I was watching yesterday. It's 206 yards, it said, which for me would be my three wood. And I'm thinking these guys are hitting 8 irons.
Unbelievable.
Or 9 irons. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. So I think it's a great course. And as for the pros and for an event like this, but I think for the average person, from what I heard, it was just brutally tough.
John, we're going to have to let you go. We've got to move on with the show. We've got the 150th anniversary of the Toronto Argonauts this week.
So we're gonna
thank you for all your contributions to our show this year. I think we've run out of major championship Sundays for the rest of the year, so my guess is we'll probably talk to you again, God willing, and wish you the best of health. And to myself and Naz, God willing, we'll talk to you again on Masters Sunday.
Can't wait. Thanks, guys, so much, and enjoy the rest of the Ryder Cup today.
We will. Thanks, John. John Steinbretter.
Cheers.
Thanks, John. We're going to go to break and come back with the voice of the Toronto Argonauts, Mike Hogan. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised that some big pizza conglomerates want to make the cheapest pizza. Some want to be the fastest. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone baked, the traditional Italian way. It's what we strive for every day, to be the best, not the fastest or the cheapest. Oh, cue the announcer.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, and we live and video stream on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. It's always a thrill to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I call him the voice of the Toronto Argonauts, affectionately known as Hoagie. And of course, I'm talking about Mike Hogan. Hoagie, how are you this morning?
Better now that I'm on your show.
Thanks, Mike. Listen, it's a huge week in Toronto. I mean, it's been a fantastic season for the Toronto Argonauts so far. Been loyally watching them. Didn't get the result we would have liked on Friday night, but in a lot of ways it was a meaningless game, and the Argos were playing a lot of their substitutes getting ready for the playoffs. But this week is a huge week in Toronto Argonaut history. 150 years, October 4th, 1873, the Toronto Argonauts were founded. When I understand, they are the oldest pro sports team in North America or the world, I'm not sure, that still continues under the same name. Remarkable accomplishment, a fantastic franchise, 18 Grey Cups, still using the original name, and they're having a fantastic year. What could be better, Mike? Bring our listeners up to speed on all the fantastic celebrations of this wonderful accomplishment for the Toronto Argonauts.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing when you think about it. I think if you were to ask most football fans, where did the sport originate? Some people might say Texas, or Ohio, or maybe in the Ivy League schools. But no, it's a Toronto thing. The first organized rules of football, University of Toronto. So this is our game. And the Argos Rowing Club was founded in 1872, and a year later they said, we need something to do to stay in shape. Hey, how about this new rugby football thing? And that's when the Toronto Argonauts started playing football. You mentioned the date, October the 4th. We're going to play on October the 6th. It's the closest date that we could get, closest to October 4th. So we'll be celebrating 150 years against Edmonton. And, the day itself is going to be fun. The game is going to be fun. Trust me, we're going to have a lot of some of the top players in Argo history come back. We're going to kick it off at 4 o'clock at the Stanley Barracks down at on Prince's Boulevard. And at 4 o'clock, we're going to have three pretty good former quarterbacks signing autographs, Condridge Holloway, Ricky Ray, and Damon Allen. And then we're going to kick those bums out at 4:45 and bring in some receivers, the guys that made them look good. Terry Greer, Mookie Mitchell, and Rocket Ismail. So an opportunity for people to come and meet some of the best players we've ever had.
The Argos have been ranked the top team since the Doug Flutie era. What do you think of our team this year?
Oh, it's really good. The two Doug Flutie teams were 15-3. That's the best record a Toronto Argonaut team's ever had in terms of win total. And we've got a chance this year to at least tie, maybe break it. Four games left, two against Ottawa, one against Edmonton, one against Saskatchewan, all of whom are beatable. And right now we sit at 12-2. So, it's been a remarkably good season. And one way or another, with a couple of wins, this team's going to be looked upon as being one of the best in the history of the sport in terms of Argonauts. So, it's been a really special year. People kind of looked at me with a raised eyebrow when I said before the season that this team is better than the one that won the Grey Cup last year. And it is. With no disrespect to the guys last year, we brought in some players that have made the team a little younger, a little faster, a little better, have drafted well, and I apologize for Jack, my dog, who is a real media star whenever I see him.
He's an Argo fan, right?
He's an Argo fan for sure.
He's Jack the Argo dog. But yeah, it's This is a really, really special team, and I hope people are able to come down and watch us play the rest of the year.
Yeah, certainly. You've captured Naz and I's attention, certainly, and one area that's captured my attention this year, Hoagie, is these incredibly, I call them beautiful, baby blue uniforms. You must be getting really positive reviews on this year's uniforms. They look spectacular.
The reviews have been great, and the merchandise sales have been better. It's funny, at the beginning of the season, obviously there was no, as you'll call it, baby blue or light blue, powder blue. There was none of that in the stands. And then all of a sudden, wham, if you go to an Argo game now, you're going to see it all over the place. People have fallen in love with the jerseys. I think they fell in love with the helmet even more.
Yeah.
I think the helmet's spectacular. And, we've been planning this for even before COVID, this uniform. And I saw the earlier incarnations, and I was kind of... And then it's just kept evolving to the point where I love these things. The details. People thought originally they were feathers on the shoulders. They're actually oars, going back to our rowing lineage. And the same thing, it's a stripe on the pant leg, but if you look at it, it's actually it's a stylized oar as well. So we're paying attention to the past and honoring it and looking ahead to the future as well as having a pretty darn nice present.
Who are the best teams to play for the Grey Cup? I'm going to presume that the Argos are going to get into the final here. Who do you think they should match up with?
I would think now is on the other side, it looks to be a two-horse race. BC and Winnipeg play. I think they play this week. They're tied for first place in the West, so the game becomes very important because it might mean a bye week in the first week, and that could be all important at home field in the Western Finals. So I would think if you like to put a couple of dollars down on the games, you would look at those two in the West, and we've already clinched first place in the East. We need to win one more game to get to the Grey Cup, and it's just got to be the right game, and that's the Eastern Final, which is on November the 11th, 3 o'clock. They've moved the playoff games to Saturday this year, so November 11th, 3 o'clock at BMO Field, and you can go to argonauts.ca for tickets.
Who would be the toughest team, Montreal or Hamilton in the playoffs?
Boy, that's a tough one. Hamilton's been playing better of late, but we have their number. We've played them a remarkable four times this year and beaten them pretty soundly all four times. So that worries me to one extent because it's hard enough to beat somebody three times in a year.
Yeah.
To beat them four times in a year is ridiculous, and to beat them five times would be insane. So just the law of averages worries me a little bit there, but Montreal would appear to be a tougher out because they've given us two really good games this year.
Yeah, I'm going to just knock on wood here.
You're going to say the act of God, right? The act of God.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say that sometimes, you know, the one thing the Argos have proved in some of their most recent Grey Cup wins is, you know what? You get on a roll going into the playoffs. Yeah. It's not necessarily the team that finished first overall. So you got to bring, it doesn't matter who you play in the CFL playoffs, that particular day when you have to win, you better bring your A game because upsets sometimes are, they're going to happen, right? So certainly the Argos are the favorites, but you can't discount the rivalry with the Cats or the Alouettes. And if I'm not mistaken, Hoagie, the Grey Cup's in Hamilton this year, isn't it?
Yeah, and boy, would it be nice to use their locker for a week. You know, the East will be the home team this year and get the Eastern locker. So, that's kind of one of the pieces of icing, I guess, on the cake. But no, it would be great. It would be especially good for our home fans who, you know, wouldn't have to worry about travel or a flight or a hotel room. They'd be able to get a ticket to the game. So if we're fortunate enough to be in the game, that would be great. And they announced Green Day at halftime, and I love that band. So that makes it an even more special kind of day.
Chad Kelly's had a big year this year, Hoagie. What do you think of his play?
He's been dynamite. I mean, it was tough because we knew last year there was something there. But we had McLeod Bethel-Thompson, a quarterback, who led us to a Grey Cup, led the league in passing last year. So, you know, if you've got two really good running backs or two really good receivers on a team, you're able to find a way to get them both on the field. You can do that at any position except for quarterback. So we knew what Chad was capable of, but I think he's blown away everything that even the most optimistic people had thought. He's just been ridiculously good. He's a confident guy. He's got a huge arm. NFL caliber quarterback, you know, he can do it all. He plays an all SEC quarterback twice with Ole Miss, and he's that guy and comes from good lineage. Obviously his uncle Jim's Hall of Famer with the Buffalo Bills. It was a natural. We wanted to see him play last year, but we couldn't because Mac was playing, and this year, you know, kind of flipped him the keys to the car. And I don't think anybody within the organization had any doubt at all that he was going to be an exceptionally good quarterback.
Another player that excites me when I watch him is the kid in the backfield there, Ouellet. He's a dynamo back there. When Naz and I were chatting about the show, who he reminds me of, and of course the standard answer is he reminds me of Ouellet. He stands on his own. But I see a lot of Neil Lumsden in this kid. He's pretty remarkable, pretty remarkable talent.
Yeah, he's a power back like Neil. He's faster. He's got a better beard. He's got better hair. I tease Neil. Neil and I did university games on TV for 4 years together, so Lumpy's a good friend. But AJ Ouellet's he's become a fan favorite because for those who haven't seen him, he looks like Thor.
Yeah,
he's got the long, 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 long beard. He's got long hair. And he has muscles in places most human beings don't have places. He's the strongest guy on our team by far. And that's saying something because, you know, think of all the big offensive linemen and defensive linemen who are just constantly in the weight room. A.J. Willett, that's what he does for a living. His offseason, he's a personal trainer. He's got a couple of gyms down in Ohio. He is a ridiculously dedicated athlete in terms of strength and conditioning. And, my goodness, there are some videos he's got up on his Twitter account of him. I think he just did a leg press of 635 pounds, which is just silly. But that's him, and he runs hard, and he's got great hands. He's an exceptionally good blocker, and he's just a fun guy that the fans have absolutely fallen in love with. So you need those guys on the team, and you know he's just that guy. He is so darn good, and it's good that other teams have to try and tackle him because our guys probably wouldn't want to.
The most important thing I think is their defense, Hoagie. The Argos' defense has been great.
This has been the big kind of area that we've improved, and our pass rush has been a lot better. We said goodbye to Jagera Davis last year, who came in and helped get us to a Grey Cup. But Flo Arimolade came in as a free agent. He was our number one target in free agency as a defensive end. He has 9 sacks already, and I think he leads the league in pressures. He's just been a godsend over there. And our other main target in free agency was Adarius Pickett, who's our strong side linebacker, and he was Montreal's best defensive player last year, and we brought him in, and he has been just insanely fun to watch. If you don't know who he is, just watch the football, and he will be there in about 3 seconds. He's around the football all the time. He has just been better than advertised as well. So it's those guys, and you know we're a little nicked up in the secondary, but the depth of this team is insanely good, and it's paying off right now because we had 3 starters, I think 4 starters down with injury last week. So the guys that have been filling it have been great, and we got a 21-year-old kid named Quantez Stiggers. Didn't go to high school; he'd be in his NFL draft year this year. He's starting for us right now at cornerback and has just been ridiculously good. I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be in the NFL at some point, but he's been a real find as well. So, yeah, it's an entertaining team with a bunch of likable characters, and our general manager is fairly likable as well.
We've been talking to Mike. Mike, we're going to let you go. It's a 150th anniversary game from the Toronto Argonauts this October 6th, Friday night, down at BMO. Yep. I think you're playing the Elks. To all our listeners, if you haven't watched the Argos so far this year, they're an exciting, talented team. This would be a fantastic event to attend. So many Argo legends from the past. Naz and I are going to have to figure out a way to get down there. Got to pick up some of this baby blue merchandise. In fact, I'm wearing my Fighting Irish cap today, signed by Joe Theismann last weekend.
Nice.
I think I'm coming down to get the Rocket to sign it as well. So, Mike,
beautiful.
Thanks so much for this, and we'll certainly stay in touch over the course of the next couple of months as the Argos make their way towards the Grey Cup. Thanks so much.
It's going to be a night any Argo fan will remember for the rest of their life. Put it that way.
It certainly will. Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate
it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Take care. Mike Hogan, Toronto Argonauts. Naz, we got 2 minutes left. Why don't we talk about the Bills? We haven't had a chance to talk
about... Josh Allen against Tua. What a matchup.
It's a fantastic setup this afternoon. They're playing in Orchard Park, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They're playing Orchard Park. And they're
I don't even remember the name. Is it Highmark Stadium?
Highmark Stadium,
I still think of it as Rich Stadium. Anyways, it's the Bills and the Dolphins. It's a battle for first place in the AFC East. The Dolphins are remarkable. They're touted as Super Bowl contenders. Dynamic offense. 70 points last week against the Broncos. Naz, who does 70 points in the NFL? So the Bills got their hands full today, don't they?
They do. It's going to be a close game, and I think the Bills will take it. Their defense is very good. Yes.
Yeah.
And the Broncos is not.
So you think that's where the difference in the game is going to be?
I think it's going to be in the defense.
And home field advantage never hurts either.
No.
So, and the good news on Bills' front, rumors have it that Von Miller is not playing today. But he looks like he's really close to rejoining the team. And if the defense is playing well, they're going to be just a little bit better.
Yeah, it's a big asset.
With Von Miller back there. So the Bills got off to a dicey start, first game against the Jets. A game they were criticized for, game plan and how Josh Allen, I wouldn't say was utilized, but some of his decision-making in that game. But they seem to have turned it around in the last couple of games, couple of dominating performances. This could be a big test for the Bills today, certainly for the Dolphins as well. It's going to measure up to, let's see who are the kings of the AFC East.
Absolutely, and I think that Miami deserves credit for the season they've had. They're a good team, and they have their receiving core is like a track team. They're so quick, yeah, so quick.
Certainly it's going to be an exciting game.
And Waddle didn't play last week.
Yeah. So the Bills' defense secondary has their hands full today, but should be an exciting game. It's going to start in about 3 hours, and on that note, the clock has struck 10. The producer's given me that nasty look. Time to get off the air. Naz, you're back. I always give you the final word.
Go Bills today.
Go Bills. To all our listeners, have a fantastic week. We'll be back again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.